As far as the no fly list.
If you're on that list.
The most problematic thing is that
anyone can be under the investigation of the FBI.
And I know that something really good is going to come out of all of this.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another week of the No Fly List, where we talk to comedians, artists, musicians, and other cool and interesting people of color. I'm Athir.
I'm Amama.
And today we had a writer, comedian, Sabih Jamil on. Woo!
Yay. He's so funny. He writes for A Little Late with Lily Singh. He's so, like, fucking talented. I think he's written for shows on Comedy Central and Netflix.
Yeah, he's so talented. He started out at UCB and we worked together on a couple of pilot shows on Brick TV called Passport Control and The Breakdown. We've had previous guests from them. So it's kind of nice to reconnect and see where everybody is and realize everyone's more successful than me. But Sabih really deserves it. This kid works so hard. I call him a kid. He's like a few years younger than me, but I've always felt like he's just such a just great like family vibes. And he's such a just so smart, hardworking. I remember, you know, he would just be working round the clock, like going from show to from working on as a writer assistant to, you know, going and doing live shows at night. And then now, you know, he's in LA working for Lily Singh, which is really cool to see. And
and he said he moved to LA like right now, like during the pandemic, basically. And it was like, so he's just been like, he hasn't really had time to explore. So hopefully right now he has that time since we talked to him like about a month ago. And now that things are like a little bit better, hopefully he's like out and about driving around
in his convertible.
Convertible, yep.
I hope he's having a great time. He definitely deserves it. He's just one of those people that you can tell just like keeps their head down, works really hard, and gets places, and is just super, very chill, humble about it.
It's good to have people like him around.
Yeah, he's awesome. We also talk about him, you know, moving out from living with his family because he had been living with them for a while. So now this is the first time he's been out on his own for a little bit. So just kind of talking about that transition. His family is Pakistani. I think he grew up in somewhere in
Jersey,
Virginia. We're like, guys, we recorded this a month ago, okay? A lot has happened, but it's still relevant and it's still good. But before we get to Sibby's episode, we're going to jump into our first segment, the No Fly List. Amama, you want to tell our listeners what that is?
Yeah. As like the world is opening up and as things are, you would think that things are getting more progressive sometimes, like as they should, but definitely not. They're not at all. A whole bunch of states have started to introduce anti-trans sports bans. So if you're trans, you can't play on a specific sports team, because these idiots think that there's like an unfair advantage. It's really just a way to torture trans kids. It's
so
really,
fucked
really
up.
Fucked up. And I'm not surprised at all because it's like Florida's doing it. Fucking probably like Alabama. But also anti-trans sentiment is everywhere. So even if your state isn't doing it, I'm pretty sure like people are just so misinformed and unaware of shit that they have these like awful prejudices. And you know what? It's Pride Month. Just like learn something. Learn something.
Yeah. If you're not pro trans, LGBTQ, all of the
all letters, the letters,
all
yeah.
of the things, and pro justice, yeah. then you belong on our no fly list, our shit list. And you shouldn't be able to fly. You got to walk or
exactly.
hitchhike everywhere.
Yeah. So especially because like, come on guys, it's 2021.
It's 2021. What is wrong with you people? But also it's been interesting just seeing how people like pick and choose what they consider,
justice absolutely.
Or equality.
Yeah.
Like how do you get to decide who gets to have equal human rights and who doesn't? I mean, the whole purpose of equality is something that should, apply to everyone
yes.
in every way. So live and let live. Don't be an asshole.
Try your best to not be an asshole.
That's That's all we want. That's all we want. Don't be an asshole. Make the world a little bit better or you don't get to fly.
But in the meantime, definitely listen to this episode.
Yeah, enjoy Sabi. Welcome, Sabi. How are you?
I'm well. Hello, hello.
It's so good to see you. Good, good. Meet Amama.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm so excited. I've heard such great things. So this is going to be so much fun.
You have? Oh, that always terrifies me. I'm like, oh, I don't know how much I've been hyped up. Yeah, I've had a pleasure to, I guess, Ethira and I have been co-workers in the past, and I was also a co-worker with the previous co-host, Layla, as well, so...
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. So Sabi and I used to work on a couple of shows together, Passport Control and The Breakdown, which were these short-lived shows on Brick TV. But check them out. It was very fun. So we were a writer's room together. And then he moved on to bigger and better things. And now you're in LA writing for Lily Singh?
I am, yes. I moved here a few months ago.
Woo. Oh, how's the move been?
It's been fine. I'd never been to LA before, so it was very much like a plant up and plant down here kind of thing. I mean, it was all during quarantine, so like people ask me what's it like. I mean, I just stay in my room pretty much until things reopen, so.
Yeah. Is LA, are you guys like, are more people getting the vaccine? Are things like kind of easing in LA? Because I know New York now, by next week, it's kind of like, all right, it's back to like how it used to be.
When I first got here, like, you could not get a vaccine, whereas, like, everyone I knew in New York, like, they weren't able to fill appointments. Like, we were pretty behind. But now, like, I think they've opened up vaccination for everyone. I got my first dose.
Nice.
The quarantining, plus, like, right now, this is being recorded during Ramadan. So, like, I'm just, like, staying inside. It's 95 outside. I'm not going outside. Yeah. So I'm just taking the extra quarantine time.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, I guess you're just seeing the inside of four walls again, but from a probably better weather outside.
Yes.
But LA, yeah, that's awesome. Have you seen anyone else like from New York or connected with any of the, because a lot of people kind of moved out there either during the pandemic or a little bit before?
Not really. It's really just since I've been here, like, I mean, it's been weird. Like, I like kind of like just like being out here and like figuring stuff on my own. It can get a little weird. Like, I think I've gone like a few days where like I won't hear my own voice just because like I'm just like working alone and like just like if anyone talks to me, it's just like through text and stuff. Just kind of like navigating the space on my own. Yeah, I mean, in terms of like connecting with anyone over here, I'm just kind of waiting, I guess, just for things to reopen until I get to like meet other people.
Yeah.
See other humans.
Even as things have like reopened here, and I was telling Athea this yesterday, I'm still like really anxious because like, you know, it's been like a year of being inside. So I've still been like, all right, like I'm slowly going to do things, slowly going to be around people. Today I might see someone just because I want brownies and they are my neighbor and they said they have brownies. And that's when I'll be like, all right, like you can come over. But yeah, everything else, like I've been like, still in like quarantine mode of just like, all right, like the weekdays, I just want to like do my own thing, really not do anything and just like read, pretend to read, write, all that good stuff.
Do you have to be on set and everything though? Like, are you able to work remotely?
All the work has been remote. I have gone on set once or twice. I've definitely gone once to, I was part of a segment. So like, I like to go in and like get like, you know, all my hair and makeup done and like all like my wardrobing from NBC and stuff. So like I hosted like this weird segment called Food or Shoe that I had pitched on the show, and then I got to like be on camera and like host a segment. So
that's awesome. So Sabi, you have such an interesting also career path, right? Because I remember when I met you back when you were a youngin, I don't know, you're still young. anyone who's like at least 6 months younger than me is like youngin. But you started out with like a career or somewhat of a trajectory in politics, right?
Yeah, I'd done like some internships and stuff in college with like the UN. And like, I think when we met, so I met you, I remember being intimidated when I first met you because I started like getting into like the Big Brown Comedy Hour kind of stuff. And you'd been doing those shows with like Dean and stuff. And I was just like dabbling in stand-up at that time. I was still in like grad school. I was studying like international affairs at Columbia. And I remember like backstage over there, like I was just doing stand-up. I was still trying to figure out what I wanted to do after I graduated. And like other people like in the green room, like Asif Manvi told me, I was telling him I was doing like bank job interviews and stuff. He was like, you want to be a banker? Whatever you do, don't become some fucking banker. And that's the advice I kind of internalized.
Wait, that's really good advice. I went to grad school for public policy and I was like, oh, I'm going to go be like a politician or whatever. And then like halfway through, I was like, absolutely not. Do not do that. Do not sell your soul. Wait, that's so cool though. Like, so was it like after that conversation where you were like, all right, like, I'm going
to
like
time to be a comedian for real.
It's been weird. I've been kind of lucky in that, like, I feel like a lot of comedians, their kind of story relates to like them like having to kind of like fight upwards. Like they don't have like a lot of support, like their family might not support them. They like go into like a comedy room or whatever. And like people are kind of like not getting their vibe and stuff. I like, yeah, like any brown person, like my family still doesn't understand what I do. But anytime I went to like, I took like an improv class or like tried stand up or like tried characters, that I was very lucky to have like a community there. Like there was always people like telling me like, yeah, this is where you belong. Like keep doing it, like keep working at it and stuff. So like, if I didn't have that sense of community, I don't know if I'd keep coming back, but like, the New York comedy scene was kind of cool in that respect. I was like, oh, like I'm not great at it, but I'm having fun. And like people here seem to be enjoying it. And like, I just like to be one of the people. Like I remember like when I met Athira, like it was this really cool, like, oh, I just want to be one of those people. So like, that's why I just kept coming back. So.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. Oh, that's so nice to hear. Also, and you were like brilliant right off the bat, and it was so helpful having you in the room of being someone who had a political background as we were doing like a kind of topical late night show. So it was cool that you had that knowledge and that foundation and then bringing that into comedy. I think that gives you like a very unique advantage, because a lot of us are just like, I be idiots at politics and just try to write jokes about it. But I think you and Amama, both I can see from your writing, like have a much deeper understanding of it and making
an
it
anger.
An anger, of course. Yeah, you got to get all the...
I sometimes have to like pull back a little bit and be like, all right, like, you want to write a joke or do you want to like vent on Twitter for 20 minutes about things? So yeah, it's...
Yeah. And especially like passport control, like the context of that coming together was like the Trump had just become president. Like there had just been a Muslim ban like a few days later. And then we saw this posting on, I forget where I saw it. It might've been like Facebook or something. Like our friend Mehdi Barakçin was putting together this kind of like show where he wanted like brown people to kind of like put their like politics take on it. And we would just put it up at the Pit. But like the entire attitude at that time, like as soon as Trump became like all the late night shows, they were all just like, we're just catharsis. We're all just like, you know, it's all like political messaging. Like Seth Meyers started ramping up his Closer Look segments. Like Everyone just started like screaming into like a camera. So like we were definitely kind of like all of us like working together. And that was very much just part of that like swing.
Yeah. And I think like, even, I think what's cool is like, yes, there is like a part of like late night that is like more like mainstream. So like maybe like the Biden heat isn't going to be as much, especially since like Trump was such a fascist. But yeah, still, I'm kind of like looking forward to like having more shows be a little bit more critical of like the Biden-Harris administration. A lot more critical. This is where like my
and we need more brown people actually writing on these types of shows rather than, you know, just having a room full of white men just trying to kind of give that perspective. What was your experience to be like working different writers' rooms? Like obviously Passport Control, that was like a unique experience that we were all brown. It was so cool. It was so fun. And we all just kind of got each other. But what is it like out there in the real world after that? I know you worked on Jordan Klepper's show and then Lily Singh after. I feel like you did something in between. You were at Netflix for a while too.
Yeah, that's where I met Layla. I was kind of navigating like the New York documentary world for a while. So I've been told, I have to verify this, but I've been told, me being on Lily Singh's show, I think I'm the first Muslim writer on a network television late night series.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
So,
oh my God.
But I have to look it up. So that being said, yeah, like up until now.
No
like,
pressure.
Up until now, I've pretty much been the one brown voice in like on like any production. So like that was kind of the case at The Opposition with Jordan Klepper. That's been the case. At Netflix, I worked on a show called Dirty Money. I worked on
Ooh,
like,
I love
a couple
that
different like
yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. I worked on like some projects like National Geographic. I did like a thing with Disney. Like I kind of hopped around these small projects. And yeah, I've kind of been like the one token brown voice in the room. And like, yeah, it's kind of constricting. Like anytime like a Muslim issue or like a brown issue comes up, everyone just kind of looks at you. And like, that's kind of the burden
like
that's Sibby? Placed on you. Yeah. And that's kind of like the burden that's placed on you. And then like, it's nice to like, now I'm in a room with like, there's like other brown people. So like that burden's kind of been lifted from us. It's more just like focusing on like what's funny to us, what's like, you know, what's most interesting for us to talk about, and also still having like our unique viewpoint or whatever, but without having to worry about like, you know, kind of like only being in the room to address like trauma or to only address mm-hmm. like a specific thing, while like all the white writers have all the fun. So
yeah, that's like, I think that's like a really cool environment. That's like what I want to like strive for, like having much more brown and black people in room, so that way it's not like, I've always also imagined like if like when brown and black people win awards, they're always like, oh my God, thank you for the community for like uplifting, and like white people can have moments where they're like, ah, I don't know what to say, bye. And it's like, having like more like diversity like would like just be cool, because like I can imagine if I like ever want something, I'd be like, I gotta go, I can't thank all brown people for this, bye. So hopefully we're moving towards like that right now, just like more and more people of color, but we'll see.
More representation, hopefully. Yeah. Or Sibby will have his own show and I'd be like, hey, hire me. Remember we worked together for a little bit?
Yeah. And also, yeah, more different kinds of like brown voices. Like right now, like, yeah, I'm grateful for like Hasan Minhaj. I'm grateful for Kumail Nanjiani and Aziz and all that, but you're still very much getting like one very specific like Pakistani American person who parents were doctors, grew up in the suburbs, straight male, all these things. And like there's like so much more we can explore and encapsulate. So hopefully we just get more different kinds of brown voices rather than just like my fear is like as I like, you know, try to progress in my career, people will think like, oh, well, Rami already has a show, so like why do we need another thing like this? So like we get like more well-rounded types of brown voices.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like no one says that about white people's shows. It's like, oh, well, we already have the, like there's a zillion of the same types of shows out there. But then it's like one brown person has a show and people are like, we don't need another. That's enough. That's enough out of you guys. We've heard enough about Muslims and brown. But it's not true, because we all have such different unique experiences. And yeah, Rami can only tell his story. He can't tell everybody's story. So I'm looking forward to, hopefully, like this will create more and more opportunities for us and more diversity. And then Sibby, like, where do you like picture your career going? Where do you want it to go? Are you still trying to like thinking about stand up, or do you want to start your own show, or what?
Oh, geez, this question terrifies me.
You're in an interview now.
Yeah. I know. Well, like, so here's the thing. So because I've got this job, my I've been lucky now to like, now like agents and managers are trying to like meet with me and stuff. And they asked me this question too. And I don't have a great answer right now, just because my sort of focus and like my sort of approach to my career has just been so much like, just put your head down and do the work at hand. Like I try not to like think too far ahead. I'd rather just like whatever's the page in front of me, whatever's like the sketch in front of me or whatever, just like try to do that as well as possible. I mean, if I had a ticket to like write my own, career for like at least like the next year, like my goal right now, like I just moved out to LA, like make every rent payment on my lease right now. That's like my top goal. And then after
goal.
That, like
that's a great
and then
goal.
After that, that's like my one goal. If, like for this year, if I can just make every payment, like I'm happy. And then beyond that, I think after this, it was always, I mean, I'm grateful to have gotten like the sketch experience. I think hopefully, especially out here, I'd like to get more like narrative experience, like working on like a sitcom series, or like, you know, like being open to like what's out here. yeah, I've been lucky to also have like my career goals be kind of flexible, just because like I used to hear like, you know, we came up with comedians who were like very much like SNL ride or die. Like if I don't get on Saturday Night Live, right.
Like that's the that's ultimate goal. That's when you know. Yeah. But that's, there's so many different career paths and tracks and like, you know, I don't want to put pressure on this. Like, when you asked me to Mama, we talk about this all the time. We're like, we just want to make our own shows, hire our friends, still do stand up. And that's kind of like the gist of it.
Yeah, and I also want my own sports show, and I've told
them that's true, mostly, and you should get one.
Yes, mostly to meet an athlete that I will force to marry me. But yeah, no, I think like we all have, it's like, it's cool to see like, again, so many brown people, different stories, different interests. But I like was plugging hard for a while. I was like, does ESPN need a brown Pakistani woman for any of their NBA interviews? And they were like, no. I was like, okay.
They really need to diversify. Speaking of places that are,
they really do. I will get on ESPN and they will fire me. They're like, you're just asking players.
You just
want to
hook up with players. Yeah.
I'm like, yes. And
Sibi, is this the first time also, I remember when you were living at home, when you were in New York, is this the first time you've been like out on your own, or have you had that experience in New York?
This is the first time in a while. So when I was doing like grad schools and stuff like that, like I did a year in Germany. I lived in Germany for a couple of years and like that was more like independent and stuff like that. And then since I pretty much the entirety of like my TV career, since you and I have known each other, it was pretty much like working from home and stuff. And now like out here, like, yeah, it's totally like fully independent. Like I have a car now. Like it's like truly like it's very much like an adult life. So.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's so
cool. I'm going to come out to LA. We're going to come out at some point. I will definitely visit you and hit you up. See this new grown Sibi. No, well, I feel like you've always been way more mature than the rest of us. Like way more mature for your age.
A lot of people in this business, like they tell you the advice they give you is to like age yourself down. And I've always tried to age myself up. I like to like hide how young I am to people. Like that was partly why I like when I was in Passport Patrol, I'd come to meetings in like a big beard and like a bow tie and stuff like that. And like sweaters to look like 40.
I loved your style. You were like 21, I think, when we met, right? Or you're like 22, maybe something like that.
22, 23. Yeah.
Oh, well, and Sabi's actually 12. He's Benjamin Button. He ages back.
I was like, I don't want to be rude and be like, how old are you? But you're 12. Congratulations. Being the youngest first Muslim writer.
Youngest guest on the No Fly List. Youngest. Yeah. Like it's the first Muslim writer on Late Night Network. Well, we'll double check that. I still like, maybe we shouldn't double check it and just assume.
Yeah.
That's
just,
the case.
Let's just say it.
I was thinking about researching it, but like part of me is also like the fact that I have to research and look it up kind of just shows how little, like how few.
Yeah, it's
there
already
are.
An accomplishment if you can't think of like 10 others right off the top of your head, if it requires any kind of research, which is sad that we have to delve into so much research just to find other Muslim writers. But more and more people, like Lily Singh got her own show, and like hopefully more and more of us will kind of rise to that. To those positions where we can hire other brown people and have that representation in the show that we want. So that's really exciting. And it's exciting to see like how far you've gotten in your career and it's good to focus on like the thing at hand, but because otherwise it's so hard when you're like, what's next? What's next? And a lot of us get stuck in that mentality, I think. And it just makes you like miserable or not focus on or enjoy what you're doing at the moment.
Exactly. Wait, so this is like, you said this is your first time like living out like by yourself, like away from family?
Definitely in a while. I mean, I was living at home with family for like at least the past like now going on like 5 or 6 years. Yeah.
Like, what do you miss the most?
Good home cooked meals. Yeah. I mean, like I cook all my meals now, which is cool, but like, I'm not a good cook, but like I'll eat it because I don't want it to go to waste. Like that's kind of just my main incentive to eat versus like, you know, at home, like eating is like an event. It's like, you know, it's worth taking part in versus over here. It's truly like a survival thing.
It is. You know, so like every time I go home, I forget that my mom is like, oh yeah, set the table. Like we're going to like actually like sit down,
make it a thing. Yeah.
And it's like a nice break where like in the past when I've been like, oh, I'm working. She's like, and you could take like 20 minutes out of your day. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. So I live, my parents live on Long Island. So when I do visit them, it's just really nice. I'm like, oh wow. Like good food. You like spend some time like cultivating like what dinner and family actually is. And then right now before this podcast, I like scoffed down like a bunch of pasta. So
it is nice to go home for the food, but I'm just like just the food. I'm going home for Eid, so I'm looking forward to all that food. Was it hard? Like I don't know. Like for me, there's no way in hell I could live with my parents like throughout. Doing what I was doing with comedy, but like as a Muslim woman, it's a little bit harder, or Arab woman, or just a woman in general. But did your parents or family kind of get involved in anything to try to tell you what to do when you were living at home?
It was all mostly just out of concern. Like they would just see me like, you know, I would go out and do shows like after working like a full day at work. Like I remember at the opposition, like I'd be at work for like 10 or 12 hours and then go and like do an open mic or like an improv, you know, thing, like terrible, like improv 101 kind of shows. Like, but I would do those just like, cause it was fun. And, you know, commuting, I lived in Bay Ridge too. So like in Brooklyn. Mm. So the commute was like, you know, if the train's not working, then like you're just spending 2 hours on a train every night and like, you know, getting home like after midnight. And, you know, my mom and like my siblings, you know, they saw me like constantly exhausted just going through it. But I think they kind of understood like, you know, I really liked it. I wanted to keep doing it. So they didn't intervene that much in that respect. But they were always like, even this past year, even as I got this job, they were still telling me like, well, you know, it's not too late to like, you know, you can still switch to medicine.
You can still
work for the government. Like, yeah, they're always sneaking that in. But they've definitely changed like. I think when I was doing those shows, like when I did Passport Control and stuff, like I didn't share any of those clips, like to like with like my family and stuff. Like they didn't really see any of the stuff I was doing on stage. And now it's like if I just hosted like that segment on the show, and like my mom's just been like passing that around to like all of her friends, like all of the family and stuff. It's like, oh, look what Subby's doing. So
that's so nice.
That's really sweet.
That is
really
sweet.
The dynamic has definitely evolved. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
What makes it legitimate to them? Because I think in my parents' eyes, it's like, did you get paid for this? How much are you actually making any money or whatever? Like, I don't, or obviously if it's on like a network or someplace that other people can see it or their friends can recognize it, that's when they're like, okay, this is legit. But what shifted for you of like being able to like share that with them?
I mean, definitely. I mean, just the fact that I can pay my bills with it is probably like a huge thing for them. Just like they don't have to worry about me. Like, I mean, they're not worrying about me right now. Like when this job ends, like when I inevitably, you know, need to look for the next job, like they might be worrying more. Like, all right, well, what's like your next job you're looking for? But I think also, I just lost my train of thought. But yeah, I mean, that was like the main thing that like legitimized it for them. Was just like being able to like pay.
Can you survive on your own and pay your own bills? I know that's how it is for my mom. Like she was afraid, like I quit my corporate job and she was like, oh, are you sure you want to do that? What's going to happen? And now that I'm, you know, making it work. And that's also my goal for this year since I quit my job, like pay rent, keep making the rent and being able to do like comedy and just like whatever I want to do. Like that in of itself, I think is like a huge, huge like, when mm-hmm. It's so nice.
Yeah. So we have a segment. It's our first segment called 50 Shades of Brown, where you get to give dating advice to people who write in to our podcast. So are you ready? Are you ready to dispense some like wisdom?
I give dating advice?
Yeah, we have a question from a listener and now we're going to...
I'm happy to help however I can. I mean, I can't guarantee it's good advice. It's the only advice I can give.
It's okay. Yeah, we just want to hear your opinion. Hopefully no one here is going to have their relationship ruined, or maybe it will. We won't ruin too many lives.
Yeah. And if your relationship is ruined, write in. Let us know.
Tell us what we did wrong and which one of us said the wrong thing.
Probably me. Yeah.
If your relationship is ruined by something I said on a podcast, then you had deeper problems than anything I
could. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you go. It's true. So, yeah, Mama, hit us with it.
All right. This week's question is, my boyfriend left me because I won't convert to Islam for marriage. I understand it's haram in their religion. We tried to talk it out for so long, but I'm an atheist and Hindu by birth. I really want him back, but his parents will throw him out and he'll be banished from his religion. I really love him, but what should I do? Should I take him back or try to work on the relationship or let it go?
I mean, you shouldn't, you can love someone and know you're not right for them. Like if you love someone, but you're not, you don't feel comfortable changing yourself for them, then like, don't do it. Don't change yourself for someone. You can still love them though. Like I think those things are, they can be independent of each other. So.
Exactly. Also, if he broke up with you because you won't convert, like, I don't know, that's like a one-sided relationship. Like, I don't know, I think you can find someone else. There's so many different forms of love. There's a lot of people in your life that you will love. And then sometimes it just doesn't work out. I've had the same thing where I was like, when I was in Boston, like, I was with a lot of people who I loved but were horrible for me at the time. And I'm pretty sure their very Irish parents would not like me either. So I don't know. I feel like this girl, you should don't convert. You don't. I don't.
Yeah,
think
I agree. I wouldn't convert for anyone. I wouldn't expect someone to convert for me. Although, yeah, there was a time in my life when I was more conservative Muslim. Like, oh, well, I'll just, you know, if I meet somebody and they're not Muslim, they'll just convert. Like, it's so easy, you know, let's change religions and beliefs. It's like, well, how can I expect them to do that when I don't even follow it? And I'm like, oh, you got to change.
Yeah, like, have you met a Muslim convert? They're the most pro, they're the most Muslim, like, they're fully
poster child.
Yeah,
they're so into
like
it.
Like, if you're converting, like, that means, like, you spent some time being like, this is what is, like, this is right for me. They are very strict.
I also say, like, it sounds like he really cares about what his family thinks, and I don't know if it's because he actually, it sounds like he doesn't care as much about dating someone who's not Muslim, but when it comes to marriage, it's like, well, sorry, my family isn't on board with it. But you know what? You also have a choice in that. You don't have to listen to your family, and you can choose, like, I'm saying whoever, like, goes against the grain in that sense, like, you don't have to marry someone that your parents want you to just because they're a certain religion. But also, if you feel like this person is right for you, some people are worth the fight. And, you know, your parents, the only leverage they have over you is, like, emotional leverage, which is a lot. And it's a lot in our culture because it's a lot of guilt and stuff. But you can choose to accept that or not. But I wouldn't get entangled up with, like, if I were her. I'd be like, nope, I'm going to let this go.
Also, like, I don't know how old you are, but, like, literally doesn't matter. Like, there's always someone else, someone better. Even if you're married and you're listening right now, there's always someone else, someone better. That's the advice that I hope someone
there is always someone better. And like my therapist says, rejection is protection. So sometimes these situations happen for a reason. You might not see it now, but maybe later on. I don't know. Sabi, have you ever – oh, I wanted to also add, like, typically, because it sounds like it's a woman trying to marry this guy who's Muslim – in our religion, in Islam, like that, a man can marry a woman who is, you know, not a Muslim, but of the Abrahamic faiths, right? So
that's correct,
I don't know how this might be more of a cultural family kind of conflict than it really is like a real, because technically in Islam, he could marry a Hindu or, no, wait, that's not one of the people of the book, right? They have to be Jewish, Catholic, Christian.
She really doesn't qualify.
Yeah, sorry. Really, you don't even qualify for that loophole.
No, she's really out.
But
yeah,
fuck
I'm
it
sorry.
Anyway. Yeah. I mean, Sabi, have you ever like dated someone outside of your faith or would you, or do you have any kind of like perspective on that? Would you make them convert?
I have dated outside my faith. I've dated within my faith as well. I mean, I would have never forced if I was really serious about like marrying someone, I wouldn't have forced them to convert if that's not what they truly, I wouldn't force someone to believe something they don't truly believe. And I especially wouldn't do it just to make my family happy. I mean, anytime I hear like even if she agrees to do this, right? Like it's just the first red flag of many, like you don't know what else family, you don't know what else their family will make you concede down the line. Like how much control will they have over your life, over things you don't really believe or don't want. So
yeah, especially if you have kids and you like want to raise your kids in a certain way, and the family, like brown families are constantly interjecting in each other's lives.
Oh yeah. This is not a one and done deal. And no, it sounds like her family, you know, if they're of Hindu origin, they're probably not going to be on board with this either.
No.
And you know, sometimes it's not worth it. I mean, yeah, I got serious about somebody that was outside of my faith, and I had even thought like, oh, would they convert or whatever? But I'm later on, years down the road, I was like, I'm so glad that we had that difference that made us stop and think, because really we weren't right for each other for other reasons. Yeah. So I guarantee you there's other reasons that you'll see down the line. That was good. We didn't ruin anyone's life. That was good advice.
I think that was solid advice. Yeah, you didn't ruin anyone's life, but hopefully we get a question that one day someone does write in and they're like, that was the worst advice I've ever gotten. I'm so sad.
Have you been dating
in LA? Oh, well, you said that you've been like pretty like inside still, but are you looking forward to the summer? I know everyone has.
You're like, gonna have like, your hot boy summer.
Hot boy summer.
I mean, maybe I'm planning a. So I should spiel that the car that I got is a convertible.
So
I got a drop top just because I figured like I don't know how long my arrangement out here in LA is. I'd like to make it a long term thing, but I was like, if there was any time to get a convertible, it has to be while I'm living in Southern California. So I've been planning with that. I've been planning like a couple road trips. I've never been out west, period. So I've never been to like Vegas. I've never seen the Grand Canyon.
God!
I want to spend the summer seeing all of that.
Wait, you should, honestly, if you message me, I love the Grand Canyon. I've gone multiple times.
I've never been.
I've like done the hiking, the camping, the taking drugs, and then talking to animals, post-hiking. Zion is great. Vegas, I didn't love. I think it's just
Vegas, I feel like you could skip, but I mean, if you have time.
It's fun, but yeah, I wouldn't recommend more than like 2 days. I think 2 days is too much in Vegas.
Yeah. But I really just want to go. I've been practicing counting cards. So I want to see how.
That's why I went. I was so. I wouldn't admit that
out loud, maybe.
No, I like read that book, whatever, like, or that there was like a movie based on like a book too, but I was just like, oh, I'm going to count cards. And then I forgot that I'm wildly bad at math and I like failed math in fifth grade. So I was like, this is not, it's like, what am I doing? I don't know how to do this.
Yeah. It's like solving a puzzle while it's moving. It's like, as long as you can, I mean, that's why I practice it. Like, I don't know if I'll be good by the time I do it. I'll just be like any other person at a table, not knowing what they're doing, but I'm just going to,
that was just, my game. Blackjack was like, I was so, I can't gamble. This is what I have, a very addictive personality. And I remember spending like hours at this blackjack table and one like was up a little bit. And then the next day I lost it in like two rounds. And I was so mad. I was like, oh, this is how gambling works. And you get where like the addiction comes from, because you're like, oh, I can win it back. No, and it was so easy. And it's just, no. And there's like gambling in my family. And I'm like, I don't think like, it's probably a gene that can get triggered with me very quickly, because I'm have like an obsessive personality and I want to win. So,
you gotta start small. Like I do sports betting and I just do like very little, like at a time. And then I like stopped this past year, cause I was like, who knows how long we're all going to have jobs for. So if I can't turn this into a thing.
Yeah, I've never been more like Muslim when it comes to that. I'm like, I understand why it's haram now. Yeah. I get it. This is, and some people can like take it and leave it. But the way like Vegas is set up too, where it's like all dark and there's no clocks around you. And then they're like, you just have no idea, no concept of time or anything.
I will say this though, for Vegas, when you go, try to get into just like one of the concerts. I like saw Nelly like playing like one night where they're
always at like these hotels, just there's always some concert happening.
So yeah, you're gonna have so much fun.
Are you a big Nelly fan?
I mean, not since what was I watching? I was watching The Longest Yard with the Adam Sandler movie. I forgot he was in that. He was good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot he was in it too. That's so funny. Okay. Well, Sabee, we have actually one last segment for you called Keeping Up with the Caucasians. And this is a segment where we talk about things that white people do and whether we as people of color also do these things. So I'm going to call out some categories and you get to pick one, and then I will name something white, which is sometimes debatable. Okay, so we've got food/beverage, pop culture or TV, activities, style and clothes, phrases or sayings, and miscellaneous.
Let's start with miscellaneous.
Ooh, all right. I'm trying to think which one of these actually apply to you. Okay. Have you ever let a dog lick you on the mouth?
Let a dog lick me on the mouth? I've never consented to a dog licking me. It's always happened against my volition.
Has a dog licked you, though, against your volition?
Yeah, definitely. I've had dogs lick me. I don't know why. I'm like a dog magnet. Like, any dog I walk by, I just wants to.
That's why. They, like, feel your inner, like, goodness.
I feel like dogs put faith in everyone.
No, they don't. They'll, like, bark at someone who's not a good person.
I thought also dogs were racist, though. They bark.
I think they also bark based on who their owners are. Like, if they've never seen, like, a brown person, obviously they're going to be like, what is that?
I get barked at all the time. And sometimes there's, like, a bunch of dogs in my building. They have owners. It sounds like they're just running around by themselves. But they're always, like, try to come lick you. Like, I've had a dog lick me in the face. It's horrible. But I know, like, people, like, white people will, like, kiss their dogs or let them, like, lick them or make out with them, basically. I'm not into that.
I had a dog last night lick me. It was when I, like, had gone back to the bar. This dog just, like, I know the dog, though. Like, I love this dog. But I don't like it. I, like, kept turning my face. And I was like, okay, Charlie. But Charlie was like, no, hello, what's up? I'm so excited to see you. And I was like, all right. Like,
let me give you some tongue. Yeah, I don't want to tongue a dog. I don't get the appeal. I don't want to eat after a dog. I don't understand people share their ice cream cone with the dog.
Oh, that's so gross. That, like, really irks me. I really want a dog. I just would have rules. Like, in the past, like, if my boyfriends, like, have had dogs, they've had, like, good rules of, like, no sitting, no, like, not on the couch, not on the bed. So those, like, because if you, they're gross. They lick everything.
Yeah. Did you grow up with any pets or animals around?
Well, yeah, I grew up on a farm.
What? So in Bay Ridge?
No. I grew up in Virginia.
I didn't know that. How did you end up in New York?
For college. I started there for NYU and then kept doing my grad school there. And that's when we met.
Oh, nice.
I grew up in the South. So I grew up around, like, goats and sheep, and we had a llama and, like, all different kinds of animals. Llamas are the best. The llama was named Tina because we got it right when, like, Napoleon was, like, blowing up. So, like, you couldn't have a llama without naming it Tina, like the movie.
That's amazing.
So, like, with dogs, though, like, I feel I even here, like, I'm fine, like, without pets. Like, I don't know if I would own a dog that doesn't have, like, a job. Just because, like, I grew up on a farm where, like, you have LGDs, livestock guard dogs. Like, you have, like, those breeds, like the Pyrenees Border Collie, like the Shelties, that, like, they herd your animals, or, like, you know, like,
they serve a purpose. You know, they're not just there to make out with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel guilty. I always feel a little guilty when I see, like, dogs, like, in a city, like, just, like, sad to be, like, just on pavement all the time. And, like,
you're like, I got a job for you?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want a dog. If I want a dog, I want to make sure it has, like, a, it feels, like, fulfilled outside of my life.
Oh, do you think dogs really nice. Want purpose, or are you just projecting your needs onto dogs?
Probably both. I know there's certain breeds, like a border collie, like, they're going to get bored. Like, you need to give them stuff to do, so.
Yeah, there are breeds of dogs that, like, need to do something or else are going to fucking go crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. I had no idea you grew up on a farm. So, and then your family moved with you to New York once you, like, moved out?
They moved a couple of years after up. Yeah, like they're all in New Jersey now.
Okay. Since the pandemic, it's probably better just move out there. A lot of people moved to New Jersey during the pandemic.
A lot of brown people
can't even get a house. Yeah, it's already full of brown people. Like, and now it's just going to be like
more,
even more. Yeah, we're gonna have to go there to like get good foods, good Arab and Desi food. But that's cool. And yeah, I guess you're gonna have to find your people in LA, or maybe not, among the sea of like white actors and models and people. I'm sure there's a lot of cool brown people I know. If you ever need anyone to connect to.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's a small club. Like, I feel like since I started comedy, like, it's been nice for the club to get bigger. Like, now you have, like, all Muslim women shows, and, like, you have, like, these kind of, like, subspecialties versus, like, just seeing the 5-6 brown comics, same, like, comics over and over again. So, like, yeah, it's been cool to see the community kind of expand out and, like, do more cool, interesting things. But I'm sure, I'll discover them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how me and Amama found each other, at an all-female brown show. And so you'll meet people like yourself, but another brown woman is what I'm saying.
I mean, we met on an all-brown show, too.
I know. The best people I've met have been, like, through these, like, brown shows. And it's really cool because I think, you know, and maybe in like where I grew up in Alabama, like the brown people like suck there. So like being in New York and being away from that community and having to like redefine your own community has been like really cool. Cause then you get to be around the brown people you want to be around, not the people that your family just brings around because like, all the judgy like aunties and their kids who are just like there to rat you out because you wore a tank top or something.
And like, this is what I still worry about this in my 30s. So, yeah.
I know. That's what Instagram muting and blocking and removing people is for. But Sibi, hopefully that's not something you have to worry about. Also, you strike me as like a good Muslim boy. So you're doing your family proud.
I try my best. That's all I can say.
Well, thank you so much for doing this podcast. This was like such a nice conversation to have.
Yeah. It was so nice to see you again and catch up and round out. As you said, you guys can check out all the other former Passport Control guests that we finally got Sibi on.
Yeah, I'm the last one. Yeah.
Yeah, but certainly not least. So, Sibi, tell our listeners like where they can follow you and anything that you want to plug.
I'll plug the show I work on, A Little Late with Lily Singh. It's on pretty late. It comes on after Seth Meyers. It's probably easier to just watch it on YouTube or Peacock if you've got that. It is Asian American Pacific Islander month. So like Peacock is just now started promoting it a lot for that reason, which we'll take it. Sure. If you want to follow me on the socials, Twitter, Instagram, I'm at Jamil For Real. Jamil's my last name. So.
Nice. Thank you. Yay. And you can follow us at No Fly List Pod. You can follow me at Athir Yacoub.
And you can follow me at Amama Sardar.
Thanks so much, Sibi.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was great.